SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, on this Thursday, and that means one thing: Tony Black, and haven't had a chance to catch up with Tony, and looking forward to. Oh, you're getting a busy signal. That's no good. All right, Casey's. I wonder if it. All right, if it's a phone issue or if Tony's doing something. Well, all right, I'll vamp for a minute because there's certainly a couple of other things to touch on. And, you know, I mentioned the win by Vinca yesterday, and I was trying to get Chuck's horse and Roger Satina's horse, Deputy Czar, hooked up, and he actually trailed early and really just never engaged for the most part. The horse that came running in that allowance in the seventh yesterday was the Michael Matz returnee. How about Just Whistle? You remember this? You remember him? Just Whistle. And I had forgotten about him, frankly. He was third in the Peter Pan and then got hurt seemingly in an allowance try on Belmonte, and has been gone since. Well, he comes back, his four-year-old debut out of the nice, the dam, and why not? And Just Whistle, Jose Ortiz, who Ortiz has won a hatful of races here the last few days at Gulfstream. You got 4-1, and I looked it up, too, because I was curious. 84 buyer. So a nice return. Keep an eye on Just Whistle, Pioneer of the Nile colt for Mrs. Groves. So that was that double that we talked about yesterday with Seth in that sequence. And then today, looking around the country in anticipation actually of tomorrow's two big races, the two allowances at Gulfstream and Santa Anita, but today at Laurel, there's an interesting maiden race, and you got a couple of nice pedigrees included. 9-5 favorite, Grand Motion for Al Frisetto, the Twirling Candy colt out of Zucchini Flower. Remember Zucchini Flower?
Yeah.
Candy Store is his name, and Graham actually has got a horse on the inside too, an El Padrino, Maryland bred, Ben and Joe. For Two Legends Farm, a homebred of theirs, out of a Sarland mare. And Mrs. Weber sends out the homebred Casper Slough, second-time starter, Mike Trombetta. And this one out of the nice Dynaforma mare, Dynaslough. And kind of a cute name, actually, Casper Slough, a ghost sapper cult, making a second start. So that's one of the interesting races on the day. You've also got a nice allowance group featuring locally owned the Gail Benson and Benson Racing last out maiden winner for Al Stahl. Locally owned, put on the blinkers, and that helped do the trick. And that's the seventh. You know, there's also that horse of Brad Cox and Gainsway's, Cornacea, the Tappet colt that, you know, won it first asking and then was the focus to a certain degree of that highly anticipated group that Owendale came out of, the allowance in January. So Carnacea is back in here. And there's Bernie Flint with West Texas, who's okay. Soap Bubble. Brett Calhoun, Sanders and Hirsch. And I want to mention at Oaklawn, speaking of four-year-olds that are coming back, we're tracking all of last year's three-year-olds. Tony's with us. I'll get to Tony momentarily. Principe Guillerme. Principe Guillerme's back today in the eighth race at Oaklawn. Third level allowance, going six. And last seen behind Audible in the Cherokee run, leading into Breeders' Cup. So, Three Chimneys Homebred Tappet out of the lovely Aubie K for Steve Asmussen and with Ricardo Santana Jr. Principe Guillerme, who never really, as a three-year-old, didn't really pan out the way we all, you know, I think everybody was, remember, he was a January, February, I don't want to call him a flash in the pan, but he certainly was a focus. Tony Black is the focus, and Tony, great to catch up.
Great to catch up with you, Steve. I'll tell you what, some of the names you mentioned bring back so many memories, and quality horsemen. When you say Graham Moshe, Michael Matt, and my man Bernie Flint, the retired Louisiana cop, had more stories. His stories were as good as his horses. Used to love to listen to his stories when he was a police officer in Louisiana. But it's been interesting. I know I haven't talked to you for a few weeks. It's an interesting time of year, great time of year to watch these young horses come to hand and see which ones we're going to be looking at in the three-year-old races and in the Derby, Preakness, Belmont, which is really, you think about it, just around the corner. In the last few weeks, I have listened, and you know, I wanted to mention something, and it's a couple weeks ago. A fellow rider, when you've ridden together for a lot, on and off for years, it's a fraternity. You're a fellow rider, you're a brother. Well, I call him my friend, Rudy L. Turcotte, passed away.
Yes, I'm glad you brought him up.
And I wanted to bring him up, because he's a name, maybe the Turcotte name is familiar to a lot of people because of Ron. And, you know, they had an older brother, I think his name was Noel, and then they had a younger brother, Roger, who was a hot buck boy and rode for a few years that came to an untimely death. But Rudy, I rode with Rudy in Maryland, Jersey, Pennsylvania, and he was a year or so older than me, started riding about a year before me. He was the kind of rider, when I did start watching what riders do and I started to get out there and just lost the bug, the kind of rider that you would watch, because he kept horses out of trouble. He was compact seat on a horse, and he had a lot of motion with his arms. You know, as the horse was reaching out, he was pushing and scrubbing on him, and it was a very animated type to watch. And he was a strong rider. I can remember when I was riding in Maryland with him, Jimbo, Vince Bracali, Rudy Turcotte, myself. We'd go out, eat, party, eat crabs. You know, we interacted. He was a good guy to be around. Whatever you did out on the racetrack to each other, he never brought it back to the room. He was a quality rider. He was a classy individual to ride with on a daily basis. And I just didn't want his passing to go without some mention. He was just a really, really good guy to be around. And, you know, I could relate to some of the things that he did and I did that didn't enhance our career, you know, with alcohol or partying or whatever that got carried away. And you know, I can relate to it because I was fortunate enough to get a hold of what was left of the good sense that I had, and had a good support group around me, and got sober. Rudy, I guess, dealt with it on and off through the years. It probably affected and shortened his career. But he was a nice individual, good individual to be around. He was a quality rider, won a lot of races, but more so than just win a lot of races, he was a good guy to be around, and he knew how to compete and not bring feelings from the racetrack back to the jocks room. He was a good guy, and he's missed. And probably lost a lot of contact with him over the years. You know, he was in Canada, and I was down here in the Mid-Atlantic States. But I'll never forget the interaction that I had with him over the years as a rider and as a person that just hung around each other.
It's nice. I'm glad you brought him up. It happened
middle of February.
Two weeks ago. Yeah, right. I think it was around Valentine's Day, and
right.
we were in New Orleans. And he did. It's funny because you're right. He thinking about the the Mid-Atlantic, and I'm just looking. He stopped riding, Tony, in 84.
Yeah.
82, really.
Only a year older than me. He was a year older. Had plenty of years left if things would have worked out better.
Wow.
Maybe his personal or,
Sure.
People call it the demons that they deal with. It's bullshit. It ain't demons. It's just the way you conduct yourself and if you have the strength and ability in the support group to when you're not able to control some of your, you want to call them demons, frailties, whatever you want to call them, they can definitely have an effect on your personal life, on your business life, and it can certainly shorten his career. He had a lot of years left, but I guess he was dealing with a lot of issues. And he'll be missed. He will be missed. He brought back so many memories. The memory, here's a memory. I had a 72 Corvette. 454 four-speed, and he had a 12-cylinder XKE Jag, and I can remember we're racing from Laurel to Bowie, and we're on Old Bowie Road. I got Jimbo Bracali sitting in the passenger seat. We're Old Bowie Road, if you ever knew that road, it was a two-lane road, turns and twists. You barely could go past each other, the oncoming traffic. And we're racing Bowie Road from Laurel to Bowie on Old Bowie Road, which had a reputation of a lot of accidents. I'm going to win the race, and I sideswipe a pickup truck coming the opposite direction. He's behind me. When I pulled over, of course, he went around me and won a race that day. And Bracali says, "You didn't sideswipe. The truck sideswiped you." I said, "Jimbo, I hit the guy. What can I tell you? I sideswiped him. We got to stop." And it turned out it was this exercise boy turned trainer. I believe his name was Peter Pugh.
Oh, my gosh. You're kidding.
That's who, I hit his pickup truck, and we won't have to report it to the insurance company. I'm going. You cost me a winner today. I'm going to beat Turcotte. I'm going to beat RL to the jocks room. But I'll fix it. I'll pay cash. Just go get it. And here I got, and I had them fiberglass bodies, in the vet. Well, it didn't take much to tear them up, and I had to put my vet in the shop because I didn't want to drive around in a 454 1972 vet. Beautiful red car, T-top. Wish I had it today. With cracked fenders. But I did talk to Rudy not that long ago, a couple years ago. And my one statement to him, because I could remember his black 72 XKE 12-cylinder Jag. I guess they were XKEs, but it was 12-cylinder, beautiful Jag. I said to him one day on Facebook, I said, "I bet you wish you had that Jag now," because I was watching at the Mecum, the auction. They're going for big money, them 70s, anything in the 60s, 70 era Jags. He says, "Yeah, sure do." And he remembered me, because he said, "I bet you wish you had that 72 Corvette." A lot of memories, and then you see when you hear the demise of someone, these memories get fresh again. Probably can't tell you what I ate for dinner last night, but I can remember what I did 30, 40 years ago.
I'm just blown away by the fact that, of all the people you end up sideswiping, it turns out to be Peter Pugh. I mean, that's crazy. It.
If you ever talked to him, ask him if he remembers that, because that was me. And I think he had a red pickup truck, and I had a red Corvette. He was going from Bowie to Laurel, and I was going from Laurel to Bowie.
That's hysterical. Is he from that? Was he from the area? I don't know Pugh's background. I mean, I just know of him from his time in New York.
Well, he was in Maryland for quite a while. I don't know if he's from the area, but he was galloping horses at the time. He wasn't training.
Wow.
Just galloping horses. It had to be like 72. And can you believe I can remember a story like that? And here I got Jimbo, Vince Bracali, in the passenger seat because I'm giving him a ride. And he says, "Black, we live together, but I ain't driving with you no more."
You were a hazard. This just shows what it's like for you. You guys are you know, you famous for buying fast cars, and it's amazing you don't get into more trouble than you do.
Well, there's been a few of us that have gotten into a lot of trouble with fast cars. The only thing I can say other than an accident here and there, I lost my license about a half a dozen times with that vet, because I remember driving home from Maryland one day, and I'm coming off the ramp of 295, and I hit it, and I'm cutting. I'm hitting like 120, 125,
wow,
you know? And all of a sudden, the red light goes off behind me. And that when I finally pulled over, the cop come up to the first thing the cop said, he says, "You know how fast you were going?" I just could have gone, you know, I'm thinking, could have gone a lot faster. I hadn't floored it yet. And I says, "No." He says, "I've been chasing you since the ramp." He says, "This is 5 miles from the ramp." He says, "I caught you at 120, and then finally you must have seen my red light and pulled over." I says, "Man, is that all I was going was 120? I'm thinking, this thing can do more than that." And then that was the one time I lost my license right away. Well, I must have lost it half a dozen times with that vet. Finally, I got a Cadillac. Josh likes cars.
It.
They do like cars.
You guys are unbelievable.
But the 12-cylinder Jag and the Corvette, they were a good match for each other.
Well, you, I love these. I love hearing these crazy stories. I know that I'm looking at, you know, some of the stuff from Rudy and Cure the Blues, probably the biggest name that, you know, of the horses that he had success with. He won the Laurel Futurity when it was a Grade One. That's a nice, you know, that's a nice, certainly a nice win. At that time, Tony, you know what? Because we have great resources, I'm delighted to put Peter Pugh on the air with you, Peter.
Yep.
Tony Black with us. He just told us a story about racing in his Corvette and sideswiping somebody, and it turned out it was you. Do you remember this? Is Tony's memory?
Tony's memory is better than mine, but. And I would usually remember something like that. Would that have been at Delaware Park?
No, Old Bowie Road, Peter. It was on Old Bowie Road, and I had Rudy Turk up behind me, and I had Jimbo in the passenger seat for Cali, and you were in Merlin at the time.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. You know, I really don't remember it, but trust me, that's a big surprise. But I did ride over jumps, and sometimes I have a lapse of memory. So... as Tony would, he would understand that. So, anyway, go ahead. What happened after that? Did we get fired or something?
We wound up, I didn't report it to the insurance company. Vince Bracali was in the passenger seat. He says, "You didn't hit him. He kind of ran into you." And I said, "No, I hit him. I'm racing down." Remember Old Bowie Road, the twist and turn and that one real tight turn that they
had?
Yeah. Oh, it was a bad road. But... yeah, I wound up, we settled it. I got your truck, Dick. I think you had a red pickup truck. I think it was a red
sounds
pickup.
About right.
Yeah, and red pickup truck.
Jimbo was in the car with you?
Yeah, Jimbo. Him and I were still living together. I think it was just before he got married. And we were living together. But I'll never forget the story, because it was a stupid act, of course, that jocks do, racing. And Old Bowie Road, you knew what the configuration of that road was.
Yeah, sure.
You had to be an idiot to race on the road. To even drive it, you had to be, you know, taking your time. And here, Rudy Turk, I've got a black 12-cylinder Jag, and I got a 454 red Corvette, and we're racing like two idiots to get from Laurel to Bowie, because the races are at Bowie that day.
I'm surprised that Jimbo didn't squawk up.
Oh, he did. He said after we drove away, "He hit you. You didn't hit him." I said, "Jimbo, I hit the guy. You're in the passenger seat. Shut the hell up. I'm going to pay for it. I ain't going to report the insurance." But you know what else I relate to? When you said it just right, when you said he went over to jumps a lot of times, and we probably had an untold number of concussions between the two of us, and there are things that are elapsing our memory. And
exactly.
You know what? As we get older, we realize, because they never really were aware of CTE, and, you know, there was no concussion protocol. You hit the ground, if you didn't break something, Peter, what'd you do? Mr. Parker, you want to ride the next race, Peter? You're on one or two more. Or you ride tomorrow, yeah. Peter? Yeah, I
exactly.
didn't break nothing. But you didn't even know if you had a concussion.
I remember having a concussion out at a place called Ligonier. I mean, it was a pretty bad one, too. And that was like, I don't know, second or third race. And I rode that day. They over the loudspeaker, they call, is there a doctor in the house? Like a surgeon. And a guy comes out of the grandstand who's a doctor, sews the side of my head up, and I rode the last race. It was a flat race. It wasn't a jump race. And they thought that, oh, it's only a flat race. You'll be all right. So, I mean, nowadays, that stuff like that doesn't happen. But, you know, but a real quick story. This is a good one, actually. I had a horse running called Ragtop at Monmouth Park. And Joe Bravo was on the horse. So Danny Malou had his book at that time. Nothing is said to me. I'm out in the, I'm waiting for Bravo in the paddock, and out walks Tony Black in my silks. Like, what the hell happened here? So, Tony, you had no idea. He said, I don't know. They just told me I'm on this horse. So, the best part of it is you went wire to wire and beat Joe Bravo. So, that was good. That's
a good one. That was a good one. I like those stories.
And he ran off in a post braid too, and you came back and apologized and said he wouldn't have won if he didn't run off in a post braid. I remember that.
He got a warm up.
Yeah, he got a good warm up.
That made him show speed, more speed than he might have wanted to show. It's one thing about it. The way you warm him up sometimes does have effect on the early stages of the race. I'm a true believer.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Horses don't get enough warm up nowadays. In my opinion.
Yeah, because they cut the post parade short in the bad weather, or they're just they're not real attentive when it comes to getting people over there where you're leaving the paddock on 10 or 12 minutes. How many times did we leave the paddock in recent years and it was 5 minutes to post, 6 minutes, 4 minutes, you know, in the wintertime, right to the gate?
You know, I'm not so sure, but I might be pretty sure, but I think you might get less breakdowns if you got more warm-up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you wouldn't, if you were to go out and run a race, you wouldn't just get up off the couch and walk outside and start running.
No, you stretch. You know? You're loosening things up.
So that's been a real problem, I think, with, and it's not even, I don't think the post parades aren't, it's not like they're too short. It's that they don't do enough in the time allotted to them. You'll see him jog off, canter around the turn, pull up, and then start walking.
And, you know, that's what my pet peeve was, because a lot of the pony people, they're working a lot of races, and oh, they don't want to utilize their pony. But I would always ask the man if I didn't know the horse, all right, you take this horse away from the pony. When I was riding every day, a lot of horses, can I take this horse away from the pony if they don't? If the pony's just hobby horsing around there? I want him to warm up. And exactly. A lot of riders, they feel maybe intimidated not to do that, and the pony people are just trying to, you know, guy takes 8-9 horses to the post and maybe only has one pony, doesn't have a chance to switch ponies, and they're looking to save their pony. Well, that ain't what I'm looking to do, to save your pony. I'm sorry, I'm looking to warm this horse up. But as you ride, you get more of an opinion and more respect from the people around you. You can stress those things like, listen, if you can't make this pony go a little faster, then just turn me loose, that kind of thing. But riders feel like they're under the gun to do exactly what everybody wants them to do at times. You know, the young, inexperienced rider, I mean.
No, I get it. I think it's a real problem. But, you know, a lot of these jocks nowadays, too, like you were just saying, that they don't want to be turned loose.
Yeah.
You know, they'll... And it's no knock on these guys. There's some wonderful riders out there now, but they'll come in the paddock, and you're leaving the paddock. They'll say, do you want me to warm up by myself? And you say, no, better stick with a pony. And a relief comes over their face. You know, it's like, thank God. You know, it's pretty funny. But anyway,
well,
sorry to get off the subject.
No, that was good. That was great, Pete.
One quick one. Like, when I started riding in 1970, every horse didn't go to the post with the pony. Now there ain't one that don't go to the post with the pony.
You're right about that.
In 70, maybe a handful, there'd be 12 horse fields, and then maybe there'd be three or four ponies out there,
exactly.
You know, because people didn't send everything. But now it's standard operating procedure to send everything with the pony, and it's kind of gotten jocks in a bad habit.
No, you're right. There's no doubt about it. We could go on and on about this. There's other stuff, too. But anyway, I hope I... answered all your questions
Peter,
about the crash.
No, that's tremendous. And I actually looked up the race that you mentioned. You're going back to Monmouth, June 2nd, 1996.
Is that how long ago it was? Was Bravo, in fact, second?
Bravo was last. Trailed. He was no factor on a horse for Eddie Broome. And Sonny Hine had sent out the runner-up. And I tell you, Tony, you won by a head. Over Rick Wilson and one of Mrs. Oxenberg's.
Another one of my favorites. I love Rick Wilson.
One of my brothers. One of my fraternal jockey brothers.
I loved him.
Yeah.
He was a great rider and a good guy.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Boulanger. Gary Boulanger was third in there. So there's a few guys still riding out of this list. Tony, Gary, and Joe Bravo. Herb McCauley. A guy by the name of Sunday Diaz?
I remember Sunday. He was a young guy.
I remember him.
He was a young guy in 96.
Yeah, he was a little punk back then.
Yeah, I was already riding 26 years in 96. These kids just started in like the mid or early 90s. He was just a punk kid. But I remember Sunday Diaz. I used to call him Sunday Diaz.
Hello.
Oh, that's so great, Peter. This was really fun, and I'm glad to get you on. And when's Geyser running back?
Unfortunately, there's not a lot of races for him. I wanted to put him in a starter for horses to run for 50 a other than, and they got three horses in it. That's why I ended up in the open one, and. That's the only thing back for him, the open one. And he ran good enough to be fourth the other day, so we'll put blinkers on him. And Joey thought that was the thing to do because he was kind of like hanging with horses. And on the gallop out, he'd gallop up to him like he was going to just blow by him and then hung with him doing that too. And he said, "But if that's not evidence that he needs blinkers, I don't know what is." So anyhow, that's what we're going to do, put blinkers on him and hope for the best.
Well, we'll watch for him to come back because he's okay. And
he is.
Right?
He must have had some concussions. He ran over jumps twice, too.
That's right. It's Shawan and Montpelier. That's right. I love it.
Trust me, from 2 miles to 5/8 is not a big deal. From 5/8 to 2 miles is a big deal. So my job wasn't that hard.
I love it. Peter Pugh, thanks so much.
No, you're welcome. And Harry, take care. I hope I see you soon.
I hope so. Take care. Thanks for the winner, and I'm glad you got your truck fixed.
All right, man. You all take care.
Take care. Peter Pugh, everybody. Tony, this was priceless.
A lot of memories, and thank you for letting me. It brought on, the Peter Pugh episode talking about RL, my man RL. See how the memories just expand and explode.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me talk about him.
No, not at all.
We've lost so many good people in the last few years, and I heard you talking about some people, and I just wanted to mention Rudy. He was
I'm glad
a good
you
guy.
Did. I'm glad you
yeah.
did.
Right.
And hearts go out to Ronnie and
the
and
family.
Family
and the kids. He had a little daughter and a son. And
two daughters and a son.
Yeah.
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 And he was predeceased by his wife, Janet, actually, as it happens. So I'm glad you did. And that was a fun aside with the. With Peter Pugh, I'm glad we were able to raise him. That's one of those unscheduled, delightful moments. And we're going to come back to that story and to that topic that came out of nowhere, which is the difference between this era and warming them up and ponying to the starting gate and how that, you know, how that actually happened. We're going to revisit that when we get a chance.
All righty.
All right.
Steve, thanks for keeping up the good work, and thanks for allowing me to state some of the memories. And, yeah, we'll talk about that, because the business has transitioned in a lot of ways. And, you know, good, whatever. Some people think good, some people think not so good. But, yeah, we'll talk about that in the near future, and I'm looking forward to it. Take care. It's always a pleasure, and thank you, Steve.
Tony Black, everybody. Just so much fun when you got 5+ decades of experience, and most of it he remembers. We wanted to do a little bit of a veracity check, and it turns out Peter doesn't remember it as well as Tony does. That was fun. We'll take a break. Bottom of the hour here. Steve Haskin next, and we're looking forward to a visit after Steve. We've got Imad Himaya, who we brought up yesterday with Pete Fornatale, and Imad, you know, has had sustained success in the contest world going back, well, what'd I say, 2012, when he won the Battle of Saratoga, $100,000 winner that day. Back-to-back weeks, he qualified for BCBC and for NHC the last two Saturdays. So we're going to talk to him, Matt. He's in Lindenhurst, and he said he's hanging. He's handicapping Santa Anita, which comes back today, and looking forward to that race tomorrow, particularly with Nolo Contesto, and see what Haskin, what Haskin's thoughts are, Desmond and Roadster. So we'll talk to Imad in a little bit, hour three. Back after this, though, Steve Haskin, second half at the races.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrisNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrisNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back a little bit into the second half after a very funny and I love those moments when we can make them happen. When the minute Tony said, "It turned out I sideswiped Peter Pugh," I started rifling my phone for Peter's number, and good job by Casey to corral Peter Pugh. That was fun. Steve Askin joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
That's a somber good morning.
Good morning.
A little better.
Half of the morning to you.
There you go. All right. You're rounding into form. No?
What can I do for you today?
You got nothing to say. We haven't talked in 2 weeks, and we've had all kinds of preps, and we've had a bunch of interesting performances. Your horse, Super Steed, got a big win at a huge price.
Well, you're supposed to ask the questions. I don't know where you want to start.
Let's see. Let's do it quickly in chronological order before we talk Fountain of Youth. And I haven't had a chance. I didn't see what's happened with Derby Dozen. Because of the outcomes, but let's start with the premier performer and War of Will, your Risen Star thoughts.
Well, I think he did exactly what he was supposed to do. I mean, he's obviously a much better dirt horse than the grass horse. Very professional. The one thing about him is that he just does everything right. You know, no monkeying around. He does exactly what he's supposed to do. He's able to distance himself, you know, from the fields. Listen, the pace up in front of him, you know, a lot of the horses are tired off that pace, and he might have even wound up on the lead a little bit earlier than they want. And it looked like he might have been waiting on horses a little bit. But, listen, he's a very imposing-looking individual, very muscular colt. Everything seems to be in the right place. And I don't know. I think he looks legitimate now. But the thing is that he's the only three-year-old that's really done anything in stakes races.
Yeah.
Everybody else is speculation.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got him ranked number three. The two horses in front of him haven't even run. The horse right behind him has won the Pasco Stakes at Tampa Bay. You're looking at horses like Hidden Scroll and Global Campaign and Intrepid Heart and Dreammaker. I mean, these are all totally unproven horses. The Derby Trail this year, to me, is pure speculation. I mean, really, other than War of Will, who's done anything this year? Certainly not on a consistent basis. You know, you got horses like Harvey Wallbanger who pops up out of nowhere. There's just not a lot going on, to tell you the truth. We're just waiting for Game Winner and Improbable and Instagram. You know, you got three horses that any one of them could be number one, and any one of them could fall off the list if they didn't make the transition between two and three. So, you know, again, it's pure speculation what these horses are going to do, especially Instagram coming off of, you know, two short sprints and a seven-month layoff. And we have to see, you know, which of the two Baffert horses he's going to assert himself and take control. If he, you know, assuming that one of them will. I mean, with me right now, it's very, very close on top. I hate having two horses, 1-2, who haven't run yet, and we're in March already. So you just have to speculate that these horses are going to be as good at 3 as they were at 2. You know, if you go by Morning Works, you know, Improbable has been the more impressive of the two. Maybe not so much in his last work as much as the others. He looked like he might have been a bit distracted in that work. But normally that horse does absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, his mechanics are flawless, and he's just a pleasure to watch. Game Winner, you know, Baffert's got to work him out of the gate. He's got to work him in company with a really good older horse and Dr. Dorr, you know, to get him to do anything. You know, he's had some big works. He's had some not so big works. His last work I thought was good, but you know, he's got that funky action in front. He runs wide up front. And he doesn't have the smoothest of stride. He's completely the opposite of Improbable, who has as beautiful a stride, you know, as you want to see in a horse. So which one is better? I don't know. If you go by Thoroughgraph, Game Winner's numbers actually are faster than Improbable's. Not by a lot, but they're still faster. So we'll have to see how how both those horses come back next week. Assuming Baffert's going to run them both in the San Felipe, I mean, you never know what he's going to do. He's got so many choices and so many horses to move around the country. So you know, he could show up in just about every single stakes race. But you know, the last you hear is that he doesn't want to ship one and then bring him back, and then have to, to ship back to Arkansas. So I think he just wants to make one trip to Arkansas with one of them. And one of them is not going to be undefeated. Maybe both of them won't be undefeated. Listen, from what I'm hearing from inside sources, very, very close to Hollendorfer, they say Instagram is better than shared belief. So whether that's true or not, I don't know. Whether it comes to pass, I don't know. We'll find out. But, you know, they're very confident, and they're asking a lot of this horse to jump into this spot. His last workout, it was okay. It didn't thrill me. He didn't change leads until well inside the eighth pole. It wasn't his typical work. But, I mean, that's still extremely, extremely high on his horse. But, again, we don't know what's happening with these horses. I mean, one of the better races of the year is tomorrow's allowance race. I mean, listen, I've got Nolo Contesto in the top 12. And you look at his past performances, and people are going to say, are you totally out of your mind? You know, he runs fifth his first time out, and then he wins by a neck half a length in a maiden race the second time out, and you get in the top 12. Yeah, because you know what? Everything this year is about the eye test. You can't go by anything else. There's nothing enough to go by. I mean, you look, two of the bet down horses in the, let's add Vekoma. It's possible that the three favorites in the Fountain of Youth, they're going to have a grand total of 5 starts in their life. I mean, how do you handicap these horses? You can't. I mean, we don't know how good Hit and Scroll is. He's never run on a fast track. If he duplicates what he did in the slop, then his Thoroughgraph numbers are so far and away faster than everybody else. But can he duplicate it? Can you come back? Is he going to bounce off that race? You know, do we know how good Global Campaign is? I mean, his last race was terrific. Vekoma has only had 2 starts. Now, horse, Code of Honor is looking to rebound off a very dull effort in his last time. He's been working great. I love the way he's been working. You don't know. I mean, it's a total guess. So we're just going to have to wait and see what develops in the Fountain of Youth, and we'll see what happens in that allowance race on Friday. The reason I have Nolo Contesto up there, like I said, it's all about the eye test. It looked to me that, the horse that he beat, Omaha Beach, looks like a really, really talented horse. who finished 8 lengths ahead of the third horse in a very strong run mile race, which is why I have him there. Again, it's all about the eye test, but we'll find out more about Nolo Contesto on Friday when he goes up against the two Baffert horses. And, you know, as far as Detchman, you know Baffert, even though he's got all these Derby horses, we haven't even mentioned Mucho Gusto, who could wind up anywhere. He might probably wind up in the Rebel. But if you look at Detchman, you know Baffert is trying to make a Derby horse out of him despite having only 2 sprint races now by running him back 19 days after a really tough race in the San Vicente, because he knows if he doesn't run in right now, he's only going to be able to have 1 more start. He's not going to run him in the Derby off of 3 starts. I know he did it with Justify, but this isn't Justify. But Detchman, I thought, ran a tremendous race when he got beat in the San Vicente. I thought he ran a really good race. And then he got Roadster. And Roadster worked 6 furlongs and 1:10 and 3. You know, then Baffert comes back and works him slower, obviously, because he doesn't want him worked up fast. So he's got him way out in the middle of the racetrack, which is what he did with Improbable in his workout. I mean, he had Improbable like 6 wide coming out of the turn. The rider just took him way out there, and he's still working 1:12. So who knows what he would have worked in if he had hugged the rail. So, again, it's going to be all about what happens in the next 2 weeks. Everything's going to change. I think in the next 2 weeks, I've got 8 out of my 12 horses are running. So expect major, major changes. Unfortunately, Omaha Beach right now has got a quarter crack, which is why I had to drop him, even though they're hoping that they could patch him up and get him ready. But, you know, he's really behind the 8-ball now. You can't afford to have a setback. And even with a horse like Nolo Contesto, even if he wins this race, let's say he wins this race, it's still a one-shot deal. He runs back in the same lead at Derby. If he runs into trouble and he finishes 4th, gets beaten a 4-horse blanket finish, chances are he won't make the Derby. So, you know, when you're putting all your eggs in your one proverbial basket there, it's dicey. You just don't know what's going to happen. That's the point system now. You can't train a horse the way you want to. You know, I know Dick Mandela wanted to run in this race. This was the race he's been pointing for weeks. But again, let's say you run 2nd in this race, or you run 1st in this race. You better come back and run 1-2 in the Sandy the Derby. And, you know, if Improbable and/or Game Winner and Instagram, if they all run huge in the Saint-Philippe, and, you know, we're not even talking about some, you know, other top horses that could show up. You know, Gunmetal Gray's been working great, and, you know, there's other really good horses out there. Not much margin for error. You better run 1-2 in the Sandy Derby if you're going to go stakesless into that race. So, what was your question again?
Well, considering, and to stay with the feature tomorrow with Santa Anita for a second, considering that Nolo Contesto, Roadster, and Detchman, that they, you know, they've all got 2 starts, and looking at the calendar, it's March 1st. So, you know, as it happens, you could run twice. I mean, you could put a race if you looked toward, let's say, Oaklawn as the stopgap, as the, you know, the end point. You really could run 4 weeks later, 3 weeks and 4 weeks, or 3 weeks and 3 weeks, or, you know, something along those lines. I mean, you got.
Yeah, a lot of trainers don't like doing that anymore.
I understand, but
6 weeks.
Yeah, I know.
You know, you don't get trainers anymore. Listen, I remember. Listen, I hate going back, you know, in time. You know, you say, oh yeah, I know, he goes back. Listen, I remember when Damascus ran into Gotham in the Wood Memorial, when he come off a tough race against Dr. Fager in the Gotham. You know when the Wood Memorial was? 1 week later, and he won the Wood by 6 lengths. 1 week after getting beat in a photo by Dr. Fager. You know, it wasn't a quirk. That was the schedule. The Bluegrass Stakes for years. You know this. Bluegrass Stakes was run 9 days before the Derby.
Sure.
The Derby trial was run 4 days before the Derby, and every Calumet Derby winner ran in the Derby trial, and most of them won the Derby trial and worked in between the Derby trial and the Derby in those 4 days. So, I mean, obviously times have changed, horses have changed. Now, you've got, trainers, more conservative. They, if you ask Todd Pletcher, what's ideal for your horse? Oh, 5-6 weeks. So if that's the way you're going to train, you better not miss anything. You can't, then all of a sudden, you're going to start in with running horses 3 weeks. That's not the way trainers like doing it anymore. They think that's, oh my God, 3 weeks. Kind of give them time to recuperate. That's why you can see Baffert's running back in 19 days. Baffert will do it if he has to. But if you're going to run Desmond back in 19 days, now, if you want to get two more starts in, you're going to get running back in then 3 weeks and then 3 weeks. So, running back in 3 weeks is fine. Running three races, each one off of 3 weeks, and then expect to go into the Derby. It's asking a lot of these horses. These horses, to me, are a lot more fragile than they used to be. So, now you've got, the Louisiana Derby. Why do you think horses don't win the Kentucky Derby or the Louisiana Derby? Louisiana Derby's always been a terrific race. When was the last Louisiana Derby to win the Kentucky Derby? Grindstone. We're talking, 20 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's 6 weeks.
Right.
That's not ideal. I mean, I'm not saying it can't be done. It's been done. The Animal Kingdom did it going off to Jim Beam, and Mind That Bird did it. It can be done, but it's not ideal. You know how many horses have taken the LeComp Risen Star? They're not the win. It's just by running in that pass. The LeComp, the Risen Star, and Louisiana Derby. You know how many horses have taken that pass and won the Derby? Zero. You know how many Risen Star winners have won the Derby? Zero.
Yeah, although I'll tell you, I'll give Jeremy Plonk credit from Monday, because he, when this topic came up regarding War of Will, he did point out that there may not be a Derby winner in recent memory to point to, but there's been some very good performances from that sequence, including...
I'm talking about winners.
I understand.
Listen, Risen Star, took that pass and ran well in the Derby. Funny Side got beat in the Louisiana Derby, but back then, the horses came back. He came back and ran the Wood Memorial. Funny Side didn't go...
And got beat again.
Derby into the Kentucky Derby.
And got beat in the wood.
Because these are preps. You didn't need, back then you didn't need points. You ran
That's
a horse
right.
where they belonged.
Well, you did need earnings,
right.
not
you
dissimilar.
Need earnings, but the thing is, if you had the earnings as a 2-year-old, you were in the Derby. It didn't matter what you did as a 3-year-old. If you won the Breeders' Cup or the Champagne or the Kentucky Jockey Club, you were in the Derby already. If you won the Delta Jackpot, you were in the Kentucky Derby.
That's true. That's true, Steve. We'll do a formal look at the Fountain of Youth momentarily. Got about 15-18 minutes. Your thoughts about Blaine Wright's horse and what you anticipate from Another Twist of Fate, who now seems set for a Sunland run, because this is an intriguing candidate, not your typical El Camino Real Derby. I mean, I happen to be not somebody that that has believed in a few El Camino Real horses that haven't panned out, but this one seems a little more potential to him than most.
Nobody's got suckered into those horses more than I have. Let's put it that way. But I will say one thing, by the way, from a visual standpoint. If you didn't tell me what surface he was running on, I'd say this is a really, really good horse. This horse has got a stride on him like you wouldn't believe. I mean, he's got tremendous extension. Now, the thing about these horses is that you never know. You know, the thing that throws you off is, and it goes with all of these synthetic horses. You look back at their first start of their life. It was on the dirt. They do nothing. And then they put them on the synthetic, and they become world beaters. Now, did that first start mean anything? Who knows? It may have just been, listen, a lot of horses run poorly the first time out, and they improve second time out. So we don't know. I mean, from a visual standpoint, that was as impressive a race as I've seen. He came home in 12 flat in that race. The way he was drawing off, you know, he's and he beat a pretty good Baffert horse in Kingley, who ran his race, who went off at 9-5 in the race, and who tried to run with him the whole way. But again, who knows? You know, he's by Scat Daddy, and he's out of his first defense mare. So you figure, well, I mean, it's obviously there's grass in there and there's dirt. First defense was a sprinter. So, you know, we don't know how far he's going to carry his speed. But right now, we just don't know. But I'm going strictly, again, by the eye test, because you can't go by anything else this year. That's the crazy derby trail we're on. But going by the eye test, I'm going to say this is a very, very good horse. I just love the way this horse was striding out. Now, whether he can duplicate that on the dirt, we don't know. We'll see where he winds up. I'd rather not see him, run in a race like the Sunland Derby or anything to, against not much. I want to find out what we have. I'd love to see him against, better horses.
Well, the Sunland, he's going to Sunland. That
I know. I'd rather not see him go there.
That's happening.
Listen, if he goes there, I remember when they sent Firing Line there, and he won by the length of the stretch. And he came back and ran monster race in the Derby. I mean, listen,
right,
I'm not saying you can't win the Derby if the Sunland Derby, mind that Bert did. But I want to know what we have. You know what I mean? I want to get a good grasp. But the one thing it'll tell you is if he handles the dirt as well. And then you have to speculate whether he's got the class to run against these horses in the Derby. But the Sunland Derby will tell us at least something, at least whether he handles the dirt as well as he handles the synthetic.
Well, a couple of names that are already, being bandied about. Mucho Gusto could end up in there, and Galilean could end up there. And of course, Todd Fincher's horse is certainly going to be there, and you would expect that Asmussen will be involved, and there's a chance that Pletcher is going to end up sending one, too. So it'll be all right, the Sun. It's always...
Speaking of Pletcher, by the way, remember their name Spinoff? That horse won at Tampa?
Uh-huh.
It's very similar. When he won a mile and 40-yard allowance race last week, and if you remember, Always Dreaming won a mile and 40-yard allowance race at Tampa. It did it earlier, so he was able to come back to Gulfstream before the Florida Derby. But again, from a visual standpoint and pedigree wise, that was very. He was still a little green, and boy, He ran away from a really nice horse in Cave Run, who was incredibly impressive, breaking his maiden, and then ran third, albeit a distant third, but behind Win, 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 in the Pasco Stakes. And he made a big run at this horse on the turn, made up like five lengths, came up alongside of him, and he just brushed him off like nothing and opens up and wins by 11 lengths. And the way he did it, I mean, this is a really good horse. This was just... If you're looking for a future book horse right now, you're in Vegas or anything, just remember the name Spinoff.
Well, and you certainly from the if Spinoff makes headway and ends up working his way to the top of the charts, one sidebar to him being. By Hardspun. Hardspun could be kind of the classic season of Hardspun if that happens. Certainly that dam, you might remember Zaftig. She was an Acorn winner for Jimmy Jerkins, and Wertheimer paid a big price for her when she went through the ring. later on when the Moors sold her. And she was a seven-figure purchase. And so this might be her coming out party. I can't think of any other progeny of hers.
Her dam. You know, you got Zaftig and Zaftig.
Right. Zaftig was, she was out of Zaftig.
Yeah.
This was Zaftig with an A, and that if I've got a picture that that our friend Gene Vitti, Gene took a I've got a picture somewhere in my files of Zaftig and I forget if it was the acorn or if it was something else that, but
probably she, if Gene took it, probably was the acorn. And you can remember, too, by the way, Zaftig is by Cosine. You know, again, one of the classic John A. rootbreds, and I love Cosine as a sire. And you don't see him that often anymore, especially this close up. So to have, you know, to have Cosine that close up in the pedigree, I mean, the horse has got, he's got the pedigree. And like you said, Heartspun now all of a sudden is showing up everywhere.
Yep.
Even as a broodmare sire.
No. It's, he... Between him, the Curlin Street Sense Heartspun story continues to just write its own chapters. It's wonderful from that standpoint. Steve, let's...
I think it was Scat Daddy from that same crop.
Was Scat Daddy in that crop? Maybe. Was it Scat Daddy or No Biz?
I can't.
Maybe. I'll look that up. Meanwhile, Steve, let's shift gears and get to, got about 10 minutes, hand over the Fountain of Youth to you, figure out what's going to happen in this group. I was a little surprised that we ended up getting Stanley Stanley Huff, and running Global Campaign in here, and it could provide... for an interesting shoulder-to-shoulder matchup right from the bell, and here's Curlin versus Heartspun as it happens, the part of the storyline, and what do you make of the way this Fountain of Youth came together?
Let's put it this way: good luck, good luck handicapping this race.
Well,
again, it's pure speculation. You don't know what these horses are going to do. And then, you know, normally you would look and you'd say, oh, well, yeah, you know, you got Hidden Scroll and then, you know, Global Campaign. Well, I guess most people thought he was going to go to Tampa. But, you know, he's going to be right outside of him. And, you know, Hidden Scroll was going, you know, went head and head in his last start in 22 and 44 and change. You know, and then you got this crazy horse that doesn't belong in the race, you know, coming off five furlong turf races in 44 flat. And he was running 44 and change at Tampa, this Gladiator King. I mean, you know, he's son of Curlin, but he really hasn't shown much, and obviously does not belong in this race. And inside of him, you know, breaking from the inside, you got Epic Dreamer. Nobody really expected him to outrun Maximus Mischief last time, and he just busted out of the gate like it was in a quarter horse race. And, you know, he set a pretty brisk pace. You know, go 46 and change, 110 and change, and was only beaten. He's only beaten two lengths, and his only win of his career, he went wire to wire. So from the outside, he's going to have to show speed. So I'm looking at a pretty hot pace here. So the horse that really nobody's talking about here is Bourbon War. Nobody's really mentioning him, but Thoroughgraph wise, he's as fast as any of them. Actually, if you look at the two fastest horses, you know, one this year and one last year, the two fastest horses other than Hidden Scroll on Thoroughgraph, it's Vekoma and Bourbon War. Vekoma got a zero when he won the Nashua last year, and Bourbon War got a 1.25 in his last start, the allowance race. Now, you might look at his allowance race and say, well, the horse I finished second to him, Cutting Humor, did not run very well in the Southwest Stakes, although he did have a pretty bad start and, you know, a very wide trip. But the horse that finished fourth in that race, got beat 12 lengths, is Everfast. who, you know, as everybody knows, came back and ran a huge race in the Holy Bull, running second, and is at 128-1, and he's in this race. And if you look at his thoroughgraph numbers, you know, he's improving with every race in his thoroughgraph numbers, and he's getting right down into somewhat contention. I mean, that was a pretty strong race he ran in the Holy Bull, but, you know, what do you know what to make of him? I mean, like I said, he was beaten 12 lengths by Burger Warren allowance race. He was beaten 50 lengths in the Kentucky Jockey Club. Breeze Futurity was up to track. We just don't know. You know, he's an inconsistent horse. We just don't know how good he is. But, you know, it could be he's getting good right now. But, and listen, Signal Man, not a lot of buzz on him. His thoroughgraph numbers actually are not all that great, but you can't knock what he's done. First, second, and third in major races last year, including a third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I would have thought that they would have run him in the Tampa Derby. I think he probably figures, well, he's not running Harvey Wallbanger here, so he might as well run this horse, but. You know, on that short stretch, you know, with these fast horses in here, with these brilliant horses, you know, that's going to lot. You know, he's more of a grinder who just keeps coming at you. He's relentless. But how he's going to handle Gulfstream Park in general, and especially at a mile and a 16th when they have the short stretch, you know, I mean, that's asking a lot to come back first time, you know, again in that short stretch. And do anything. But the thing I loved about Bourbon Ward's last race, you know, was the way he accelerated and the way he split. He was weaving through traffic, and then the two leaders, he just split right through them. Just went right through them like butter. And he didn't flinch. I mean, he just went right through them and drew off. And I thought it was very impressive. So we'll see how good he is. And as far, and like I mentioned earlier, as far as works, I loved Code of Honor's last work. Listen, it was only 49.3. Yeah, Grant, you know, it was a bull at work. But, you know, it was 49.3, but it was a pace in park. And just watching him do it, I loved the way he was striding out, the way he was carrying himself, the way he was, you know, had his legs under him really close together and hugging the rail. It was a brilliant, brilliant work. I don't know if the one post is going to hurt him at all. It's probably not where I'd want him to be. But right now, it's a race. You know what? You got to look at the odds board. I think the overlay might be Bourbon War, but anybody can win this. Well, not everybody, obviously, but listen, Code of Honor can win this race, and Bacomer, if he's as good as he was last year, if Hidden Scroll is as good as he looked his first time out, nobody's beating him. And again, the thing I loved about Global Campaign's race, you know, his numbers aren't anywhere near Hidden Scroll, but you know, he was running against Standard Deviation, who's a, you know, was a stakes horse, and watching with the quarter pole, and if you watch, Luis Saez is on Global Campaign, and he's just sitting on his horse, not even moving on him. And the jock on Standard Deviation is pushing and whipping and driving and not gaining an inch. And Global Campaigns is coasting along on cruise control. And I was very, very impressed with that.
So was I.
So, you know, he's been working well. He's had a few bullet works. It's a crazy race. I mean, is anybody you like in particular here?
I think, you know, the storyline that you hit on is really, you know, is really the right one, that everybody here has got, you know, has got something to prove in terms of taking not necessarily a next step, but, you know, progressing, whether it's from 2 to 3 or when it comes to Hidden Scroll, the dry track. I mean, every indication based on what you've seen at Payson is that it's not going to be an issue. And under that presumption, I mean, he is very much the horse to beat, but that doesn't make him an automatic winner. He's got, you know, other things to deal with. I mean, this is a quality, there's quality throughout this group. And I think you hit on all the right themes. You know, Vekoma coming back, you know, Bourbon War, been working, you know, just toward this very quietly, and feels like, you know, with natural progression, that he's a major player. And from a price standpoint, I think you're right. I think he's the horse that most typically would. Although George Weaver doesn't necessarily take you know, tons of money, but that 97 buyer is going to scream out to people, undoubtedly. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and like I said, he ran a zero on the thoroughbred, so I mean, and he gets Lasix for the first time.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's going to be interesting. Plus, yeah, he's coming off a bullet work in 59-4. He's been, you know, all of his works have been good. And then you say to yourself, listen, what if Code of Honor runs back to a Champagne? I mean, he ran a phenomenal race in Champagne.
He's got the most to prove. He's got the most to prove, Steve.
Oh,
I think he's the biggest. He's the biggest suspect coming into this, to me.
He could do anything. Like I said, if he runs back to the Champagne, when he went 34-3, and he's closing in on Complexity, who just basically went out there the whole way. If he runs back to that race, he's going to be right there. If he runs back to his Mucho Macho Man, then he's not going to be anywhere.
And you know, and it's funny because I was going to say, let's, you know, if mentally lay out a ranking, and you know, for me, the Hidden Scroll, Global Campaign, Vekoma, Bourbon War, Signal Man, and Code of Honor. When you do it that way, you realize, wow, there's six there's six real horses in this thing, and
yeah.
There's going to be at least two people, at least two sets of connections, bitterly disappointed with what transpires here. So this should be a lot of fun.
A lot of horses are going to drop.
This is what you want.
Like one of the reasons I didn't put Vekoma in my top 12 is that I want to see him as a 3-year-old, because he really doesn't move well up front. He paddles really, really badly. He runs with his head cocked. I mean, he's not a pretty horse to watch. I watched his last workout. He worked in company when that 59-4 work. And he was working against a pretty nice horse. Come on, Jerry. And he just absolutely left him. Oh, excuse me. No, it wasn't Come on, Jerry. That was another one. He was working, I think he was working against Breaking Lucky. But George Weaver
said
Breaking
sense.
Lucky, right?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, so he's
That's
got
right.
a grade one stakes horse as an older horse, and he's working head and head, and you can say, all right, well, you know, he might have let him win. No, go watch Cindy is on Breaking Lucky, and she's pushing him, pushing that horse as hard as he can go, and Vekoma leaves him and absolutely dusts him at the wire and beats him by daylight and just leaves him after the wire. And it's not like they weren't trying with Breaking Lucky. They were. Cindy was pushing on that horse pretty good. So off of that workout, and from a physical standpoint, he has really grown. He looks much more muscular. He looks 100% better this year than he did last year. He still has that. He's not going to get rid of it. That's just the way he runs.
Right.
How long he lasts with that, you never know when horses paddle like that. It hasn't stopped him so far, but he's only run twice. And he, you know, don't forget, he did miss the Champagne, and he missed the Remsen, and he hasn't run since early November. So we'll see. But like I said, he's getting late. If he runs back to that workout against Breaking Lucky, he's gonna be right there. And that was a dynamite workout.
Well, Steve,
but now everybody's totally confused.
No, they're not. They're everybody's chewing on all the different slices of these. You know, these pieces, so not a problem. Enjoy the weekend. Should be tremendous. I will talk to you from Tampa next Thursday.
Oh, you're on the road again, huh?
Yeah, we're hitting Tampa and Clearwater, and then we'll be down in... I may run up to Ocala and do a show or two from Ocala before the sale there, early in the week before the HBBA convention. Then a week home... And then the big run, and that'll include back down to Florida for Gulfstream sale and Fasig Tipton, the big sale, and then Florida Derby week, and then out to Santa Anita Derby week, and Arkansas for Arkansas Derby week.
Well,
that's
got
the schedule.
Somewhere.
We've got All the usual sponsors, yeah.
It's not. You must be raking up those frequent flyer miles.
Cost me the same to stay home as it does to go
you
make
these
trips.
You know what that means, by the way? All this traveling, all these different places, it means you're becoming famous. Everybody wants you.
Nah.
Handicapping contests and HBPA meetings and seminars and symposiums and races and anything that's going on. We want Steve Bick to do a show from here.
It's my pleasure. I'm happy to go.
I think you're going to see a really, really good Tampa Derby.
I think so too.
I mean, I can't wait to see what win-win-win does. I'm sure you can also.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, that one last time that I loved, that Dreammaker's going to be in there.
Yeah.
There's going to be some really nice horses. I see Nick Spoke had a workout. They haven't given up on him. He probably will show up again. There'll be some others. There'll be some
So Alive. Pletcher's got So Alive going there as well.
So Alive, right, of course. Right.
The Vino sibling. No, it's going to have to be very good to beat Street Sense in any given Saturday. Because that's the last Tampa Bay Derby I attended.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, by the way. I'm just wondering if So Alive, last time So Alive worked. I don't remember seeing, I haven't seen a word from him.
All right, get to work. You figure it out. And we'll talk to you next week from Old
School. All righty. Have fun.
Steve Haskett, everybody. Let's take a break. I'm going to look forward to this. Imad Himeya is going to join us and talk a little about his horse playing success back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.